looking back, I can see that the creation and then the demolition of the Berlin Wall framed the first half of my life. I was barely becoming politically conscious and aware when I heard about the Berlin Wall going up, which of course paradoxically was all about keeping people in rather than preventing them coming in. And its demolition in, was it 1990, 1991, really marked the end of a whole era of politics and a way of thinking about the world and what seemed to promise a bright new future. In fact, all the fears about the reunification of Germany haven't come true. The East hasn't been left as a kind of economically devastated hinterland, giving rise to neo-Nazi movements. Germany's now a prosperous and unified country. But wall building is still tremendously popular, now with the Hungarians and the Serbs keen to build a wall right along their frontier to stop asylum seekers getting in. And of course, the Americans quite keen on electronic fence along the Mexican border to stop wetbacks getting in. I say this really by way of wanting to talk about the letter to the Ephesians that we heard a brief excerpt from this morning. And I want to start off by saying that the world I grew up in was a world of remarkable homogeneity, of sameness. In fact, my mother used to fear the alien otherness of what lay beyond our tight nuclear family, and the fear that we'd have unsuitable girlfriends or the wrong kind of friends who would drag us down socially as a family. This is all about the love of your own, the love of the familiar, the love of what we know well, which is why walls are very popular. And you know, one of the great things about being a priest and being in the church all my adult life is it's brought me into contact with a much wider circle of people, a much more different kind of species of human beings that I might have otherwise connected with. I've been delivered from the world of sameness. Now, I want to talk a bit about the kind of situation of the Ephesians that they're being written to. This is a disciple of Paul, one generation on from the life of Paul. He's a Jewish Christian and he's writing to a predominantly Gentile congregation. And it's a church that's forgetting about Jewish origins. It's moved away from all those fights that took place in Paul's time about whether we keep the Jewish law and whether we have to be circumcised or keep all those interesting dietary regulations. And the first message of the author to the Ephesians is this: don't forget the Jewish origins of the church. He was a Jewish Messiah who came for Jews. The scriptures we hear read out in our worship assemblies on Sunday morning are Jewish scriptures. And if we think about ourselves as the new temple, well, that's building on the metaphor and image of the temple that used to be in Jerusalem. And a second message is, you Gentiles who used to be distanced from God have now been given a homeland, a spiritual commonwealth. You've been brought near by to God. The kind of privileges that once only belonged to the Jewish people are now yours as well. Never forget that. And furthermore, this great fundamental division in our world between Jews and Gentiles, between the so-called standoffish Jews with their ritual purity laws, don't come into our home, we're not going to eat with you, and the kind of despising, arrogant world of the Romans and the Greeks who looked down on Jews. Well, at least we bathe regularly, and goodness, your barbaric customs like circumcision and your sexual puritanism, forget all that. Well, all of this fundamental divisions be overcome in Jesus Christ. What you might call a horizontal world of division has been abolished. And also with it, the vertical dimension that a gracious God has revealed himself, has drawn near to those who were once far off, has made himself available through his sacrificial death to forgive sins, to bring people on side with God who were once estranged at a distance from him. And the way he's done it is, first of all, that Jesus drew on to himself all the animosities and hatreds and divisions of the world to kind of bear it to his breast, like a mother who's got an hysterical child who holds on to him until he stops flailing and beating around, to neutralize all that evil. And then secondly, by sending the Holy Spirit, because one of the prime functions of the Spirit is as a relationship repairer, a reconciler of apparently impossible or strange situations. And this twofold operation has broken down the wall that divide, broken down this walls of division to make it possible for this new community, this new humanity to emerge. That quote on the front cover of the Pebble spells it out in a bit more theological detail than I have. You know, it's remarkable just how multicultural the church can be now. A few weeks ago, I went to a meeting at the St. Patrick's Pastoral Centre called by Father Gerard Ainsley, the local Catholic priest, to look at the whole issue of asylum seekers and people who might want to come to New Zealand under emergency situations, and looking at it in a pretty positive spirit. And there was a Dutch woman talking about the very welcoming and hospitable policy that Holland has. There was a young woman there of Vietnamese origin. She sounds like us now, and she's married to a Kiwi, but she's Vietnamese and one of the original boat people. There was a German guy talking about it. I thought, what a remarkable way in which the whole family of humankind's kind of here in this room talking about this issue. And then we now live, as a result of the expansion of Christianity around the world, in a world in which there are small missionary churches in just about every culture group, language group, and geographical part of the world. And no matter how small these churches are, what they contribute is that, you know, we've got the gospel in all its entirety, all its orthodox content, but each one of these small churches, from their own cultural, linguistic background, bring alive a certain part of the gospel, polish it up like a jewel that needs further illumination and burnishing to make this different part of the gospel available to all of us as in our relationship of mutual responsibility and interdependence. So, in the basis of all this, my take-home messages to you are this. When church is over, do I just talk to the small, comfortable group I know and am familiar with? Or do I speak to others also, especially newcomers? Do I offer hospitality to members of the parish I don't know well, where that may take me outside my comfort zone? Do I take an interest in and am supportive of the wider activities of the worldwide church and the church beyond the frontiers of Dunedin? And am I open to the Holy Spirit getting to work on strange relationships in my life that have apparently come to an end? Am I prepared to let God move in and remove those internal obstacles to reconciliation and relationship repair? And finally, let's never forget and be appreciative of the Jewish origins of our religion. Jesus came to call his own people, and the big lack in the church is the lack of the broad mass of Jewish membership that he hoped to be there. And Christianity just doesn't make sense unless you're aware of the kind of Jewish background of Jesus and the Bible, and out of that renewed appreciation in a way that doesn't kind of supersede the Jewish people but sees their situation in a new light, our own faith comes a bit richer and a bit more alive. Spoken in the name of God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.